You are invited to attend our no-cost legacy planning workshop on Saturday, October 12, 2024, from 8:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. Legacy planning is strategically distributing your assets to celebrate your life. In this workshop, you will hear about what the Bible has to say about financial legacy, building an estate, obtaining long-term care insurance, putting your legal documents in order, tax-advantaged giving, what community foundations offer, and opportunities for insurance for final expenses with no physical exam. Knowledge is power. These steps can assure that your legacy is a memoir that truly celebrates your life. Registration is on the Bethany Baptist website at bethanybaptist-pgh.org. Or you can contact the church office at 412-242-3255.
In Jesus, the Teachings, founder of the Pittsburgh Institute of Biblical Studies, author, and senior pastor of Bethany Baptist Church, this is Sonia Hall thanking you for joining us for the first half of Techniques to Becoming a Great Lover, Part 4, from our series, Techniques to Becoming a Great Lover. So let's join Dr. Glaze for the first half of Techniques to Becoming a Great Lover, Part 4.
All right, we're going to continue on with our series in 1 Corinthians chapter 13, where we've been talking about techniques to becoming a great lover. Now, once again, unless we have a carnal mindset, we're talking about agape love, the kind of love that God has and that the Bible says, for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son. So that's agape love. God so loved the world that he agape, he gave sacrificially, he gave us the best that he had to offer.
And so as we look at 1 Corinthians chapter 13. We've been dealing with this whole idea that in the Corinthian church, they had a bunch of problems. They had the gifts. They had great abilities. They had resources, but they didn't have love. And so Paul writes chapter 13 to try to let them know, as we said a couple of weeks ago, it's just like making some Kool-Aid. You can have water and you can have sugar, but until you put the Kool-Aid in there, all you have is sugar water. And so it is with the gifts. You can have all the gifts in the world. You can have all the abilities in the world, but if you don't have love, what does it mean? You know, we talked about the idea that you can have supernatural abilities. He said in verse 2, he said that I have all power to understand all prophecy and mysteries and knowledge, and I have all faith so that I could remove mountains. You know, we talked about that idea of Superman. And here Superman has all the power in the world. Superman can do great things. But just think, if Superman didn't have love, then all his strength and all of his abilities would be used for the wrong thing. But because Superman had love in his heart, he used his powers to go and try to help other people. And so you can have all the abilities in the world, and if you don't have love, it means absolutely nothing. You can be the most sacrificial, the most giving person in the world, but if you're just giving to get people off your back, if you're just giving because you don't want to hear somebody's mouth, then what does it really mean? Has it really come from the heart? He said, though I give my body to be burned, and though I give all that I have and have not love, it means absolutely nothing. And so we've been talking about techniques to becoming a great lover. And we gave the outline. We said in verses 1 through 3, it talks about the power of love. In verses 4 through 7, and that's where we are today, it deals with the performance of love. In verses 8 through 12, that deals with the permanence of love. And then in verse 13, that deals with the preeminence of love. So let's pick up as we begin reading in chapter 13 in verse 1. And one of the things that I found interesting in my studies is that some people have, or some commentators have said that Paul wrote 1 Corinthians chapters 1 through 16, and he, you know, at that time, chapter 13 wasn't in there. And Paul had probably written, according to some commentators, had written chapter 13 on another occasion, that maybe it was sometime before he had wrote this expose on love, or maybe after he wrote 1 through 16 addressing the issues that were in the Corinthian church, and he wrote chapter 13. And he came back and inserted chapter 13 right in the middle of the book. And so he saw that the thing that they needed, because once again, if you look at 1 Corinthians 13, you see Paul was addressing some serious problems. In chapter 1, they were dealing with divisions in the church. In chapter 2, they were talking about some being of Paul and of Apollos, and they were bragging about who baptized them. And then in chapter 3, they were dealing with the cardinal people in the church. In chapter 4 and 5, they were dealing with issues of going to court with one another, and a brother that was living with his or sleeping with his stepmother. And then in chapter 7, the whole issue of marriage and sex and singleness. And chapter 8, he was dealing with this whole idea of offering meat to idols. And then we move over to chapter 11, and they were dealing with the abuses of the Lord's table, and Paul had the right to try to get them straight because of what they were dealing with at the Lord's table. Then in chapter 12, they were dealing with the whole thing of the gifts in the body. And chapter 14, he gives that whole exposition on tongues. And then there was a little confusion about the resurrection, so he writes chapter 15 to try to get them straight on the resurrection. And then they had problems about the offering, and so he wrote chapter 16. So Paul writes 1 Corinthians, and the whole book is addressing issues. Isn't it amazing how that in the midst of addressing all these issues, that Paul inserts a whole chapter just on love? And he said, look, we can straighten out a lot of stuff right here if we just show love one toward another. All these problems that I've been writing about in these 15 chapters, we could have straightened out just by showing love towards one another. In verse 1, he says, though I speak with the tongues of men and angels and have not love, I am become as a sounding brass or a tinkling cymbal. And though I have the gift of prophecy and understand all mysteries and have all knowledge, that I have all faith so that I could remove mountains and have not love, I am nothing. And though I bestow all my goods to feed the poor, and though I give my body to be burned, and have not love, it profits me nothing. That is the power of love right there. Then we move into the whole idea of the performance of love. Love suffers long. Love is kind. Love envieth not. Love vaunteth not itself, is not puffed up. We covered that last week. This week we're going to cover verse 5. Love does not behave itself unseemly, seeketh not his own, is not easily provoked, thinketh no evil. The first thing that we see as we look at the performance of love this morning is found in verse 5, where it says, love does not behave itself unseemly. If you want to follow along in the notes, they are there for you to follow along. Or if you want to follow along on the overhead projection unit, you can do that also. But as we look at the Greek meaning of this phrase, it means indecent, where it says there, love does not behave itself unseemly. The word is translated ashomenoi, and it could mean indecent. That love does not behave itself indecent. Paul uses this word here to mean that love is not offensive. It's not impolite, or it's not rude with other people. You know, as we think about the Corinthian church, we see that in chapter 11. Now, you'll notice one thing, and I failed to point this out last week, so I'm going to point it out this week, is that in the place where we have the phrase where we talk about love does not behave itself unseemly, what I did there was put the scriptures where the Corinthians were in violation of this particular principle, and this is why Paul is writing this to address this specific issue. So if you go back and read these verses, you will see that these situations were actually going on in the Corinthian church, and that's why Paul uses the terminology that he uses to address these issues. In chapter 11, you know, there was that whole issue about praying with your head covered and praying with your head uncovered, and how that people were acting rude right in the service. Also in chapter 11, they were coming to the communion table. One was eating good while the other one was over there hungry, and they were just disregarding each other. They were being, as we would say, ignorant toward one another. And then in chapter 14, you know, there was that whole issue of tongues where they were just acting rude and improper and that whole thing. And so Paul says here that love does not behave itself unseemly. Love is not offensive. Love is not impolite. Love is not rude to other people. How was this fleshed out? You know, I'm a firm believer in not just telling people when they're doing wrong or telling them how to know if they're doing wrong, but also to see how we can begin to flip the script and turn things around and get headed in another direction. And so that's why I put the practical meaning in the far column, so that we can see what this really looks like, and we can, you know, not put up our spiritual umbrellas and say this is for the other person, but that we would take down our umbrellas and we would allow the bricks of the gospel to hit us in our head and in our hearts, and that we would receive what it is that God is saying to us. You know, I found that, you know, you can take some of the most godly people in the world, and at sometimes, in some point, they miss it when it comes to this thing called love. Oh, some as I heard one preacher say, "Don't shout me down when I'm preaching good." Now, all right, you don't have to get quiet on me now. All right, some of the most godly saints miss it on this whole thing when we start talking about love. And so, from the practical sense, what can we say when it says that love does not behave itself unseemly? Well, a couple things. Love cares for the feelings of others. See, if I've got love in my heart, then even if I have something to share with you that might be rather unpleasant, I'm not just going to come off at you. As I was talking to somebody last week, you know, we kind of, there was a phrase that was coined, that whatever comes up, comes out. See, well, you know, you got to be careful there. You know, just because it comes up, that don't mean it got to come out. All right? And so, you know, we need to understand that as we deal with issues, that we need to be sensitive of the other person's feeling. Sometimes the saints just ramrod other folk like they don't have any feelings at all. You know, God placed in them feelings just like he placed in you. And so as we deal with stuff and we deal with it from a love perspective, the Bible says that love is not rude, but love is sensitive to the feelings of other. I like this right here. Love acts with style and with grace. See, love acts with, you really want to be classy. You really want to be a classy individual. Act with some style and act with some grace. You know somebody that I just love, and not because he was a member of this church, but because he's a class person. He is a class person, and that's Tony Dungy. This is a class brother. I mean, just look at him. I mean, he had the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. He coached them, and the year before they won the Super Bowl, he got fired. And you know what, Tony, I never heard him say a negative word against the management. When they went to the Super Bowl and won it the next year, Tony had every opportunity to say, well, that was my team. You know, I'm the one that recruited. I'm the one that he didn't. You know, they're just a class act. And you know what? That's what love is. You know, love is a class act. That when people are attacking you and people are, you know, maybe coming at you in ways that make you feel angry and have animosity in your heart, brother, sister, you just got class. You know, you're just too dignified to let somebody turn you into something that God doesn't want you to be. You know, you hold your head up, you hold your chest out, and you walk like you got some class in your life. But, you know, sometimes we just get ghetto on people, and you know, we go off of them. And you know what? At that point, you know, I just say, you've lost all your class. You done showed your true colors. You know, even though you walk around saying that you a saint and you got your halo, I can see the horns pointing through that halo. Have some class. Love has class. And you know, when in the midst of just abusive circumstances, you know, you don't go off on the other person. Now, you know, I got too much class to dignify this issue with me coming down to your level and fighting with you, you know, on an ignorant basis. You know, man, love, when love is not ignorant. And notice what it says also, love does not humiliate others. You know, man, you know, one thing that I'm concerned about is that we as God's people here at Bethany Baptist Church, that we make sure that we leave each other with dignity. You know, that should be, if I have to address you on an issue, then I should address you in such a way where after this is done, that you're going to have some dignity about yourself. You know, I'm not going to put you on Front Street, and I'm not going to ridicule you. I'm not going to tear you down in front of others. I'm not going to take abuses against you and then, you know, humiliate you. But, you know, I'm going to come to you. As the scripture says, you know, I'm going to come to you because, look here, bro. Look here, sister. I don't want to put your stuff on Front Street. You know, my concern is that we can work this out. And you know what? Somebody help me here. Somebody help me here. Somebody help me here. That this does not need to go outside this circle right here. Because, see, if it goes outside this circle, then what I have done by taking it outside the circle is I have opened up opportunities for you to be humiliated. And I'm just not going to do that. I love you too much to humiliate you. But see, if I don't have love in my heart, then what is my objective? My objective is to see you slam dunk, kicked, spit on, run over, backed over, every kind of abuse that you can get if there's no love in my heart. But if there's love in my heart, I want to be able to walk away from this situation knowing that that I've acted with style and grace, and you still have your dignity. That's the way love operates. That's the way love works. Paul says that love is not impolite. Love is not rude. Love is not offensive. Love is not ignorant toward other people. Love cares for the feelings of others. Love acts with style and grace. Love does not humiliate others. And look at this. Love gives respect to all. Recognition to superiors in rank and kindness to inferiors in rank. See, sometimes we think that because people are not on the same economic level or social level as we are, that we can just dog them out. But love is not like that. You know, I would pray that if somebody came in here and we have had it happen, where people have come in here and they have come in tattered clothes, they have come in not being able to take care of their personal needs over a certain period of time, and you know what? I would hope that we could show them just as much love as we could that person that comes in that's high-fluting official that has the suit on, clean-shaven, wearing some all-spice aftershave, and coming in hair fried, dyed, and laid to the side. You know, I would hope that we could have that same respect and that love would not be rude. You know, there was a story about this college classroom. Well, actually, somebody has sent me an email, and it talked about five lessons to make you think about the way you treat people. Five lessons. And there's actually five stories that was in this email. And I just want to share one because I think it's relevant to the point that I'm trying to make right here. Five lessons to make you think about the way you treat people. And the first one is called the cleaning lady. And the person says, during my second month of college, our professor gave us a pop quiz. I was a conscientious student and had breezed through the questions until I read the last one. What is the first name of the woman who cleans the school? Surely this was some kind of joke. I had seen the cleaning woman several times. She was tall, dark-haired, in her 50s, but how would I know her name? I handed in my paper, leaving the last question blank. Just before class ended, one student asked if the last question would count toward the quiz grade. Absolutely, said the professor. In your careers, you will meet many people. All are significant. They deserve your attention and care, even if all you do is smile and say hello. I've learned that lesson. I also learned that her name was Dorothy. You see, it don't make any difference who people are. We have no right, as people that say that we have the love of God in us, to treat people ignorantly. No matter how low on the social poll, no matter how low on the employment poll or how high they are, that if we got agape love in our heart, you know, we don't see people of position. We see souls that Christ died for. And so that's why Paul said that love is not rude. How about you, my brothers and sisters? Have you violated this principle that Paul is talking about here? Have you been rude? Have you been ignorant? Have you been offensive? Have you failed to show politeness to people who come across your path? You know, one of the things that, for me as a minister, and I tell my wife this, let me just share from my heart. You know, let me just share from my heart, all right, this is Pastor Glaze speaking, is that, you know, everywhere I go, somebody knows me. You know, my wife and I went out to dinner, we went way out somewhere, and we got out there were still people out there that knew me. And so I have to be careful, you know, because, you know, people very easily, you know, could say, man, you know, Pastor Glaze was up in the restaurant, he didn't even speak to me. You know, how ignorant was that? And see, I mean, you know, it's just like, you know, people sit out, you know, I speak to a lot of people, and there's, you know, a lot of people in the crowd, and they see me and look at my face for 45 minutes. They, you know, my face is locked in their mind, whether for good or for bad, you know. It's like, but you know, I just glance and as I'm preaching, so and I don't see, but people see me, and so I have to be careful that, you know, I just don't walk past folk and just disregard them. But I was saying, you know, from the other standpoint too, I got to be careful because, you know, some ladies might take it the wrong way. If you walk by and, you know, you're looking at them, you know, and you're trying to see, well, do I know this person or do I not know this person? And in the midst of you trying to figure this out, you know, somebody could take that the wrong way and say, you know, Pastor Glaze, you know, he like to check out the ladies at the restaurant. You know, so you know, you have to be a little careful because on the one hand, you can be accused of not being polite. And then on the other hand, you can be accused of something else. So, you know, pray for your pastor. Pray for all pastors, as a matter of fact. You know, pray for all. See, you know, that's one of the things that, you know, when people tell me that they're praying for me.
Thank you for joining us today on A Kurt and Jesus. Tune in next time for the conclusion of Techniques to Becoming a Great Lover, Part 4. If you would like to request an audio copy of today's message, Techniques to Becoming a Great Lover, Part 4, you can contact us at anchoredinjesus.org and request Techniques to Becoming a Great Lover, Part 4. That's anchoredinjesus.org and request Techniques to Becoming a Great Lover, Part 4. Or call us at 877-831-5060 and request our series, Techniques to Becoming a Great Lover. When you visit our website, anchoredinjesus.org, you can view many of the other teachings by Dr. Galais. Dr. Galais is the author of 10 books. For more information about these resources and how to order, visit anchoredinjesus.org or call 877-831-5060. We also invite you to like us on Facebook at Anchored in Jesus Ministries. If you would like to make a financial contribution, please visit our website, anchoredinjesus.org, or send it to Anchored in Jesus at P.O. Box 24034, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania 15206. Once again, that website is anchoredinjesus.org, or can send your financial contribution to Anchored in Jesus at P.O. Box 24034, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania 15206. It's through your prayers and gifts that we remain here. Our title, Anchored in Jesus, comes from Hebrews chapter 6, verse 19, which lets us know that Jesus is our high priest and an anchor for the soul. Now, for today's and our volunteer staff, I'm Sonia Hall reminding you, you don't have to be tossed in the storms of life. Your soul can be anchored in the Lord.